Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Blitz is defined as a sudden, savage attack. It is indeed all this. The effect is sure. The premise is simple. It's a basic, primal confrontation. Man to man. No excuses are offered. None accepted.
Welcome to the latest edition of Longhorn Blitz with Horns247.com.
Looks like a radio station.
Now, here are your hosts. Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers.
Pure athlete, yeah.
A transcend race, hombre.
Matt Butler.
I don't talk man. I back it up.
And we are chock full of that, man.
Damn right.
And Jeff Howe.
It's still real to me, damn it.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
If you're going to blitz, come strong, but don't come at all.
Coming strong with a holiday bowl season edition of Longhorn Blitz with Horns 24/7. I am Jeff Howe. Belated Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Early Happy New Year, or maybe it's belated Happy New Year whenever you're listening to this. Whatever you're doing, however you're doing, we hope you're doing well, and thank you so much for listening to the show. We have got not just a bowl game to talk about. We've got some NFL draft stuff to talk about, potentially. And we got an offensive coordinator to talk about. All that stuff went down pretty much today as we sit here and record this on Sunday night before Texas gets ready to face Utah in the Alamo Bowl to close out. Some retrospective on the season in time, but we won't, you know, lament on that too much. We'll just kind of let that marinate and keep that off to the side and let it stew, and we'll get to that later. But let's go ahead and get to the business at hand. But before we do that, let me bring in the rest of the team. He is the master of the soundboard, the drop machine extraordinaire, Matt Butler. Matt, how was your holiday?
Great one. Had some good times with the family. How about you?
Wonderful, man. My young daughter, it took her a while to figure out the proper process of opening presents, but once she got it down, she was, man.
It's like swimming for a dog. They figured it out.
Was there like an aha moment that she found out something cool's inside and now she got excited for the next one?
When you can grab the paper with both hands and rip the paper.
Rip it. Mom had to show her? Mom and dad had to help her.
Yeah.
And she's like, I got this. I get something good every time? Boom.
The process needed
muscle memory.
It was stunted a little bit to the point where we had to have like an intermission and say, okay, let's take a break right now. We'll get to this later.
Yeah, no doubt.
Because we might be here till 7 o'clock tonight, but
but trust me, next Christmas it won't be her freshman season. She'll be deep in it.
Just like incentivized. So
she's early on.
Just like Sam Ellinger going from 17 to 18, right? All the mistakes and the head scratching moments, and then
before you know it, she'll be Joe Burrow when come Christmas time. She'll be she'll be up before you guys.
I guess the equivalent of destroying it pre-snap is when we got to hide stuff in the attic because she starts sleeping. So, there you go.
That's what she's on it, dude. She's Christmas Eve. Yep. She's figured it out.
He can make all kinds of football analogies because he's that kind of a renaissance man. We love him here on the show. He is our lockdown corner here on Longhorn Blitz, and you get him on 104.9 The Horn each and every weekday on the broadcast from 1 to 3. Lifetime Longhorn, 2002 UT All-American, 2002 semifinalist for the Jim Thorpe Award, fourth round draft choice of the New York Giants back in 2003, spent his NFL career with the Giants, Lions, Bears, Bucks, Broncos, and a year with the Hamilton Tiger Cats in the CFL. When he was done with football, he got himself back to Austin, Texas in the 40 Acres, where he earned his degree. Whenever he gets that T-ring back in his possession, I promise I will make sure he wears it proudly. Nevertheless, he is a card-carrying member of DBU. I mean, to get that All-American honor recognized by the NCAA, they give you that black card. Number 21 in your program, number one in your hearts, Mr. Rod Babers.
Thank you for the intro, brother. Yeah, Chad actually asked me if you rehearsed that intro, and I was like, I think he freestyled it one time and then kept after that. He just kept doing it. I think he added to it a couple of times, but after that, I think he just – he's like, does he have a notepad? I was like, no. He literally just does it, boom, off the top of his dome.
Yeah, you hear the wrestling promo inside his mind. It was. And then, as if he were to call any – I mean, he
knows
your
chronology.
That's
why Chad recognized it, because he's a wrestling freak. So
nice encyclopedic knowledge real quickly. All-American, Texas,
some Gene
NFL
Oakland
teams.
In there is what he's basically saying. He's giving you a Gene Oakland comment.
Oh, Mean Gene.
I appreciate that.
Mean
Gene.
That guy's quite entertaining.
Rod, I was the reference to Chad Hastings, Afternoons with Chad and Kevin, also on the horn.
Yes.
Good friends. of the show. Right, let's go ahead and just tackle it.
We'll go
one step at a time.
That's a lot of
we'll
stuff
get
going
to
on,
bowl
man.
Game stuff. We'll get to NFL draft stuff with Sam Ellinger and Sam Cosmi. Let's go ahead and start with the topic du jour right now. This if you can read the tea leaves, this has been going on for about a week now, maybe even longer. If you needed confirmation on how close the Mike Yurcich hire was to being completed, go back and listen to Tom Herman's press conference on Friday when he arrived at the Alamo Alamo Bowl and talked about the offensive coordinator search in past tense and didn't correct himself.
He had moved on.
Right. This one was, for all intents and purposes, was over, and now it's officially over. Mike Yurcich, the passing game coordinator at Ohio State, is now the Texas offensive coordinator. It's official. So, Rod, when I look at this hire, and we talked about the candidates, right? And we knew Joe Brady was going to get a phone call, even though we all figured that probably wasn't going anywhere. Obviously, the search zeroed in on Graham Harrell at one point. I know Chip Long, the former Notre Dame offensive coordinator, was a guy Tom Herman talked to. Kirk Shiraka from Minnesota, now at Penn State, was a guy Texas looked at. We did hear, you know, Major Applewhite's name popped up, even though that I don't think that was ever going to happen. But you tie it all together, and you get Mike Yurcich. And for me, Rod, were there bigger names out there to be had? In my opinion, yes. But I think in terms of the fit Tom Herman was looking for, I think he got the right guy because Mike Yurcich does have experience, which he had at Oklahoma State, of coming in, looking at somebody's offense, and basically running that offense. Obviously, as a coordinator, play caller, you put your own spin on it, but Mike Yurcich is comfortable coming in and running somebody else's offense, which is what Tom Herman wants him to do, evolve this pro spread offense, but the offense is basically going to stay the same.
No, I totally agree with you, and, you know, just obviously a bird's eye view of it. I'm a big, you know, I like Mike Gundy. I know I've criticized Mike Gundy on this show this year. Been very
this
critical
year,
of
Gundy's
him.
Gundy's weird. Even this, game
this year, Gundy, I don't know if he's.
That
I'm
Aggie
not
game,
say,
he made some same decisions.
Not
going to
say he's losing
Texas
it. Exactly. I'm not going to say he's losing
he's
it, but
not
Gundy.
He's coaching as if he has a mullet.
He's been strange.
He's gotten very conservative in
very
his
strange.
Old age.
But I also, this is what I like about Gundy. Gundy, go look at his track record since he got to Oklahoma State at 2005, I believe it was, first year. He's really outside the box at picking OCs. And he actually knows that he doesn't need to be calling the plays because he's going through this kind of same struggle that Tom Herman's going through right now. Like, oh, I want to call them plays because I'm an OC. But I know if I really want to make this the best football team possible, I don't need to be calling the plays. I need to be actually delegating elsewhere. I need to be into quality control. I need to be in special teams. I need to have my hands in defense. I need to go all over the place. And I think what Gundy struggled with, and he's gotten time. I think that Tom Herman did not have that luxury at Oklahoma State because, you know, he did have a sugar daddy there, God rest his soul. All right, and T. Boone Pickens, who believed in him. But look at the OCs he's had. He had Larry Fedora to start out. All right, that was his first OC, I believe. Then he had Gunter Brewer. Most people don't even know who the hell Gunter Brewer is, but he was like an in-house hire for Mike Gundy. And now I think he went on to be the co-OC or the OC with Larry Fedora in North Carolina. Now he's with Louisville. But
consider one of the better receivers coaches in the country.
Yes, and he was a receivers coach, I believe, at Oklahoma State when he promoted him to OC. Daynor Hogerson after that, that's when Gundy fell in love with the air raid. That's when he goes kind of all in on the air raid. He's like, no, the air raid is definitely the way I want to build my passing game. Then Todd Monken comes in. Todd Monken's his OC, and Todd Monken's kind of a bastard stepchild of the air raid. Always, you know, he's not a stalker. He's an air raid stalker. He's not a disciple of it, but he always wished he was. And then there's Mike Yurcich after that. And Mike Yurcich, this is where he comes in because he is so malleable. This is the beauty of Mike Yurcich and kind of what you were talking about. And this is why you were talking about, Jeff, and I think this is what Mike Gundy saw. Is that this guy can come in and almost in a non-disruptive way integrate his principles into yours and still make a collaborative offense. Where most people, if Graham Harrell comes in, he's got to run the air raid. Got to run it.
Yeah.
And I think Mike Gundy actually probably had the same... He probably had the same apprehension. He probably had the same type of response to the air raid as, you know, Tom Herman did and Mike Gundy, same thing. Like, I don't want to take over my offense. I still want to have balance. What's Mike Gundy's calling card since he's been in the Big 12? Balance. I want balance. I want to run the ball. I want to throw the ball. I want my balance. And that's what Tom Herman ultimately wants. He wants balance, why he loves the 11 personnel. Yurcich comes in, and Yurcich can bring that balance with the passing game and have that fluid, you know, collaborative relationship between a passing game and the running game. And I think that's what Tom Herman's kind of fallen in love with. Sean Gleason, who I believe came from, Princeton, I believe. Man, dude, trust me, Mike Gundy will look all over the planet to find a guy that is compatible.
He found this guy in Shippensburg.
Exactly. He found him in Shippensburg. Yeah.
I remember me and Jeff had just started the podcast. We had no clue what Shippensburg was in 2012. I didn't.
I did the research on it, too. I was like, what the hell is Shippensburg?
We brought up the name like 3 weeks ago just because we were throwing somebody from Okie State. But
what he's willing to do is go far and wide to find somebody that's compatible with him. Like, no, somebody that's compatible with my ideals, with what I believe offensively. And I think that may be more important than finding just a really explosive, prolific offensive ideology, because Tom Herman ain't going nowhere. And he knows he's going to want to, you know, he's going to want to put his fingers in it. He's going to want to, you know, veto different things. Then find somebody that can work with you in that capacity. And honestly, I think Yurcich may end up being the best of those candidates if you look at it from that point of view, compatibility.
When you look at, like, Shiraka was a guy looking at kind of his track record and what he's done at Minnesota. He was a guy that intrigued me, and obviously he intrigued James Franklin enough that he's going to be the new offensive coordinator at Penn State. Yeah. But when you looked at the other candidates, Rod.
Brett Lashley intrigued me a little.
Brett Lashley did because of the Herb Hand tie-in.
Yeah. And then the air raid, he got mixed in with Dykes. I was like, ooh.
And then he's obviously a power spread disciple of Gus Malzahn. There you go. But looking at the other candidates, like Chip Long for the compatibility issue, not that Chip Long's a bad coordinator, because I think, you know, thing you hear about Chip Long is dynamic play caller, which is what I think Texas needs. But I just think leaving the situation at Notre Dame that he did, I don't think being somewhere with a head coach whose job is on the line, who has an offensive background, who might want to still have his hands on the offense, I don't think that's something. Chip Long just finished working for Brian Kelly. I don't think he's going to want to go work for Tom Herman, like push comes to shove. And who knows, maybe one day they unite down the road. You never say never in football. But and to your point, I think if it was going to be Graham Harrell, for Tom Herman to feel good about that, I think from the jump, Graham Harrell had to be in the boat with both feet, no question. Hell yeah, let's do this. I'm going to bring this offense. We're gonna light up the scoreboard, blah, blah, blah. In other words, I think Graham Harrell's enthusiasm on a scale of 1 to 10 had to be about a 13.
Yeah.
And I think initially it was about a 6.
Yeah, apprehension. He was like, not sure about this.
Because I think for Graham Harrell, I think what it boiled down to, Rod, is USC a you-know-what show right now? Absolutely.
Yes.
But he knows the ins and outs of that catastrophe over there.
Yep.
He doesn't know the ins and outs of what's going on at Texas.
The devil,
He finally got to pick some tools that he could use there. So
now, I totally agree with you. And I still think he might have made a mistake.
Yeah.
Right.
Graham Harrell. But if it was like Arizona, he might not have. But when it's USC.
I understand the thought process. It totally makes sense to me. Like, no. You stick with the devil you know, and you develop those quarterbacks system already in. And they don't like Clay Helton. They hate him. They love you. They hate him. Yeah. So that's always a good opportunity for a coup d'etat.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we look at Mike Yurcich, I don't know how much you can take from his 1 year at Ohio State other than just what he did helping to develop Justin Fields.
Yeah.
Because Ryan Day called the plays, and I'm sure Mike Yurcich had a hand in that in terms of game planning, but you can't watch.
Is he the quarterback's coach?
Yes.
Well? Okay. Yeah, there's some quarterback development there.
You can't watch Ohio State, what they do conceptually, and think, okay, Texas is getting that. There will be some of that because they're both power spread offenses. Like Ryan Day took the Urban Meyer, basically kind of what Tom Herman wants Mike Yurcich to do. Ryan Day took that Urban Meyer power spread and has evolved it. Yurcich is going to do the same thing at Texas. But the bottom line is, you know, you can't glean outside of the Justin Fields development, you can't glean a whole lot from Ohio State. That said, Rod, you look at the strides Justin Fields made, goes into the Fiesta Bowl with 40 touchdowns, one interception.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And granted, Ohio State's got insanely ridiculous skill talent on the outside that's a mismatch for just about everybody in the Big
from
Ten.
Central Texas.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is, in addition to the compatibility with Tom Herman, Tom Herman getting somebody that can take his pro spread offense and evolve it, I like looking at what he did with Justin Fields this year and how Justin Fields, how his game grew. I think this is a hire where I think you can maximize the final year you've got with Sam Ehlinger.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I actually, I like the hire, and I do think it was a thorough search. I think what we were asking for was, hey, man, can you be thorough about this? Can you make sure that we are going as deep as possible, you know, in terms of vetting every possible candidate that's compatible with you, not going with the necessarily the most popular hire or even the most obvious one, trying to figure out the one that's right for you. I always talk about that with compatibility with quarterbacks and, and offensive coaches. You know, it's not the woman you marry. It's not the hottest woman you ever dated. She was the one that was right for you. And I think in this situation, I'm with you. I'm kind of reading the tea leaves. I think Yurcich is a good hire for Tom Herman. I think he can push him a little bit to evolve the offense, but still there is compatibility there in the structure and the philosophy of they want to be a balanced pro spread, which is basically the power spread. And Gundy's probably been as balanced as any team in the Big 12 for the last 10, 15 years.
I mean,
if you go look at his best teams and when they're at their best, they're just balanced football teams that can hurt you either rain the football as a dynamic football team offensively or throwing the football downfield.
If you look at Gundy's background, the guy was turning around handing it off to Barry Sanders and Thurman Thomas in college, and he was an offensive coordinator for Les Miles.
Yeah.
So
yes, I'm saying he gets it. He does. And honestly, to my point, I even have been overly critical of him because I think, honestly, if he's not so committed to the run versus Texas this year, I think they beat Texas.
Yeah,
but he was so committed to it, that running the football, that's why they didn't beat Texas. But also his commitment to the run game is why Chuba Hubbard is a 2,000-yard rusher.
Yes.
Because he knows Chuba is a special player. So I understand the give and take there, but I like the hire. I like Gundy's offensive mindset. I've always been a big fan of it. And I think it'll work well with Tom Herman. I do. I think this is the balanced pro spread. This is perfect for it.
Yeah,
it really
and it's exactly like you said, the marriage for the situation is big, too. Not only did we have to have somebody that was going to work for the offense going forward, but Tom Herman's in an odd spot of his career with Sam, man. And it's a tipping point moment, but he didn't want to hand over the keys necessarily to something, or if you had to do a full transition and change to a different type of offense, I don't even know if you could afford that, and then to find the right type of option, because if your ideals are, or the ways to be more critical of your offense this year was, you fell back into a few situations where you maybe didn't do what you intended to do when you looked at the game afterward, but going into it, you maybe didn't have the plan. So the offense went awry within the game and within the season, which means the problems really aren't anything ingrained within it. It's just a few tweaks, and he's a guy that can be able to have somebody that can maybe come in, bring in fresh thoughts, fresh new ideas, but also not have to revamp everything because he has to win right now.
That's why he's keeping some of the coaches, we assume. We don't know how many of the coaches are going to stay. Mm-hmm. But we assume there's going to be a 1, 2, maybe 3 offensive coaches that are going to stay.
Herb Hand's under contract, so I think.
Exactly. And I think when you're bringing in a new offensive coordinator, listen, I know it's compatibility we're talking about, but convenience is a part of it too. Because the fact of the matter is, every offensive coordinator you bring in is not going to agree with you having certain coaches at certain positions that you already have given honorary tenure to.
Yeah.
Like, Herb Hand's your O-line coach.
Grandfathered in.
Oh, I need an O-line coach. Like, my O-line coach is critical to my run blocking schemes and how I teach this and that. And some coaches will go, well, hell no, I'm not, no. And you're going potentially give me what may be an albatross around my neck with a coach that I didn't choose. If you're going to let me, if I got to cook the meal, I got to be able to pick out the groceries.
Instead, for the groceries. This is like a fixer.
So that's why I think, you know, not saying, you know, Graham Harrell and all those guys wouldn't have worked, but I think some other coordinators would have been really adamant and vehemently saying, hey, I need to pick my coaches. I think Yurcich have been in a position a couple of times going, no, I'm good.
I'll come figure it out. I'll be the fixer
we'll
with you.
Out. He's a good coach. I know he is. You believe in him. We'll figure it out. We'll be able to marry our principles and marry our technique and terminology. Yeah, we'll figure it out. That's why I think that's important, man. That's important in this situation.
We've seen staff rebuilds at Texas. We've seen them, not just staff rebuilds, but initial staffs. We've seen them done a number of different ways. And I think Tom Herman with this reboot, Rod, he's going – more so the route Mack Brown went after 2010.
It is.
Where
very Mack Brown.
Look, I'm just going to hire the best guys I can for each position and just hope you get it right and hope it works.
Well, it won't be the best guys at every position.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, try to go get the very best you can.
I think
you know
you're starting with the offensive coordinator, defense coordinator, the best guys I can get for those positions. And then after that, we'll just kind of let the chips fall where they may. And I don't know if that's going to work or not, but I like the hires. I will say that. And I'm kind of with Matt. I didn't think it was – I thought the issues this season, I think it was in the details where games were lost. And I think that Tom Herman understood that too. He's like, damn, right. Man, we lost the game on this drive. Yeah. We lost the game on these three plays, on a handful of plays for TCU and Iowa State. And hell, even LSU for that matter. Now I look back. Yeah. And if those games, if Tom Herman's able to devote himself to other aspects of the football team, I think he's figuring out, he's starting to say, you know what? I could have made a difference. I could have made a difference on special teams in this game, or I could have made a difference on the defensive call in this game. And he's saying, no, I had too much tunnel vision. I couldn't see the forest for the trees. So, yeah, I understand his thought process. Like, no, we're not that far away. We're like, oh, man, they suck. Like, no, we're not that far away. We're a 10-win team who's now a, you know, 7-win team, could be an 8-win team. But we're close. We screwed up some of the details. In the Big 12, it's a very competitive conference. And there's nobody – hell, you saw Oklahoma get whipped by the SEC and LSU. Hell, like,
made Texas look good.
Exactly. It did make Texas look good. But I think it also –
That just shows where Texas was this year.
I think it throws the Big 12 in a conversation where the Big 12 might be the most competitive league in the country, just because I don't know if there's a great team in the Big 12.
Well, and
even the worst team in the Big 12, hell – Kansas. Who's the worst team in the Big 12? Is it Kansas?
Yeah.
Hell, Kansas.
But they're catching up.
Down to the wire.
Yeah.
Here. That's what I'm saying. Like, I think it's just there's such a drop-off in the SEC and the ACC and even in the Big 10 and, hell, even in the Pac-12. In the Big 12, the drop-off is not as immense, or maybe just the ceiling is not as high. Whatever it is.
Oh, man. Have you looked at the ACC?
Oh, my God. It's
yeah.
Like, Wake Forest won 8 games in the ACC.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's what I'm saying. I'm not trying to pump up the Big 12. Nobody, not by any means. The Big 12's got a lot of issues, and we don't measure up to the SEC or the Big 10 or even the ACC now because of Clemson alone. My point is, in terms of competitive parity from top to bottom, I think it's the best conference in the country potentially.
Yep.
Just because on any given day, Oklahoma lost to Kansas State, for God's sakes. It's not a dominant team.
But
the Shakespearean flaws of every team in the Big 12 are so glaring that. That's why Baylor could win 11 games and go, hey, man, they almost lost like 3 or 4 different times.
Yep.
Iowa State is.
They lost to Rice by 8 points.
Dude, Iowa State could end up being a 9 or 10 win team.
Yeah.
He lost like 2 or 3 games by 3 points.
Based on a few one possession situations, so could have Texas. And that's where the one thing I think and I didn't really think about this till you started talking right then about Tom Herman at Texas. The one thing Tom Herman has done that Texas hasn't had since like 2009, he raised Texas's ceiling. Now, what made this season more frustrating is because you didn't reach it, and that's where these huge questions are. But you saw that Texas has a ceiling with Tom Herman, with talent, with good scheme. Now, this year was things that you could definitely be critical of, and he made admitted mistakes. But Texas doesn't have a ceiling the way that they had for the past decade. You couldn't even compete with the top teams in all of football. And this year, you saw Texas be able to at times, and even last year, not only with the amount of sheer talent that you have, that you filled a roster, that then you maximized individuals and players, and that's sort of why this year became so volatile, and it's always going to be directed towards the coach and the team if you don't live up to expectations. But he should also get a little bit of credit for raising that ceiling to have that expectation. And perform the same way that, say, they did against LSU. And whenever I was watching last night, like just looking at Trevor Lawrence, basically Clemson won that game off of the quarterback draw, and that's all he did. And you're just a guy with the quarterback draw, and then off of the draw, just 2 quick pop passes. Like, literally, Ohio State stopped them all game long unless it was based off of the quarterback draw. There was one thing exploited. Yep. They identified it, they exploited it, and they won a one-possession game because of good coaching, because of good things. And, like, I watched that and was just like, that's Texas-Iowa State But we were running our head into a wall. Exactly right. You throw that pop pass right there, have ETN, it's two receiving touchdowns. They're right there. It's the same idea. So it's just those minuscule details now. You would like to see your team being maximized and you being at that point for every game, because it looks like even when Lincoln Riley's in the playoff, he finally loses. But there's not the huge drop-off situation. And certain coaches and certain programs get to that point where you can't have the drop-off, and that's where you want Texas to be.
To your point about the coaching in the Clemson-Ohio State game, Clemson, and they had to add something that would give them an advantage. So what they used, a plus one in the running game with the quarterback. They were like, you know, we got to do it.
With even though Trevor Lawrence is hidden athleticism.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll use that. And once they have to adapt to that, that's when we'll kill them on a pop pass. They also on defense use that inverted Tampa 2 that Ohio State's been using a ton of. And Ohio State never really truly was able to adjust to it. So, I mean, just throwing it out there. Good coach. That's it.
No,
I mean,
that
gives you I'm not going to bring up the Dallas Cowboys, for God's sakes, all right? But, you know, the Dallas Cowboys this year are a prime example of that. I mean, everybody knows Dallas Cowboys are a talented team.
Yeah.
You know, but it's all coaching, man. We know it.
Rod, when you talk about competitive balance in the league, one team I thought of was TCU. And you look at TCU season, they beat Texas. They go to double overtime with Baylor. They have that call late in the Oklahoma game. Probably should have beaten Oklahoma. And they're sitting at home during bowl season.
Exactly. Mm. Like the Big 12. I mean, it is, and that's not a good or a bad thing. I'm not complimenting anybody. I'm not degrading anybody.
No, it is what it is.
It is what it is. It's such a competitive conference. So, getting back to Matt's point, man, Tom Herman, I'm sure he watched every game and went, damn, man. It's like 8 plays or 9 plays right now. That's the difference between us being a 7-win team and a 9-win team. You know what I mean? Or maybe 10 plays or whatever it is. But it was right there, and it was all because you as a coaching staff didn't adjust here, or you didn't adjust here, or you didn't have the right game plan in this game to start off with, or whatever it is.
But I think two teams you can look at that kind of, to me, encapsulate the league and the nature of it, Texas and Baylor. How does Texas go from 10 wins to 7? Baylor goes from 7 to 11.
11.
Yeah. Well,
attention to detail.
It's attention to detail, because look how many one-possession games you end up playing in this league.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And one-possession games, Rod, are a thing that typically year over year, if it works for you one year, doesn't work for you the next, and vice versa. Last year, Texas was a pretty good in one possession game.
Really good. It means you need to have a great offense.
This year, you start looking at Baylor like – their game against Rice was an 8-point game. They probably should have lost to Texas Tech.
TCU.
Had plenty of chances to lose to TCU. You know, had a big lead on Oklahoma. Oh, the Big 12 championship game was an overtime game. I don't think.
Was that a close game with them?
Yeah, that was a 2-point game. So I don't feel like I'm off my rocker saying, when you look at what Baylor's potentially going to lose on the defensive line, especially if James Lynch goes to the NFL.
That's true. Yeah, he's gone.
If Baylor's 7-5 next year, it's not going to surprise me.
I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Because, and it's not anything against Matt Rhule, it's just that's the nature of the beast, man. You're not going to be as good in one-possession games from one year to the next. You're just not, unless you're Lincoln Riley and you can just outscore everybody.
I was going to say, and that's why Lincoln Riley is king, because when Lincoln Riley goes up against a good defense, his offense doesn't necessarily skip a beat, right? It doesn't struggle. Tom Herman's offense, when it met a defense that was – admirable or at least above average in the Big 12 or nationally, that's when his offense would struggle at times. Not versus LSU. He didn't versus LSU. And versus K-State. Those were the two exceptions, but those are also games at home. But against Baylor on the road, TCU on the road, Iowa State on the road, that offense struggled.
Even West Virginia. Even though West Virginia
a little bit on the road too. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like
if you don't
know OU, that was a tense. It wasn't a home game.
That's a road game.
As a road
game.
That
environment's, you know what I mean, crazy.
Yeah. If you don't get 4 turnovers in that West Virginia game, we might be talking about a different outcome, or at least one that you're not throwing throwback passes to Sam Cosmi in the fourth quarter.
Exactly.
You know?
No. So that's what Yursich is here for. He's here for the OU game, that TCU game, going up against John Heacock. Going up against Gary Patterson, going up against now Alex Grinch, you know, and help now OU's defensive coordinator skips my mind for a second. Phil?
Oh, you're talking about Baylor, Phil Snow.
Phil Snow, sorry. Yeah. Baylor's defensive coordinator. Yeah. So it's those kind of four, you know, defensive minds in the Big 12, which are the better defensive mind in the Big 12. You saw Harmon's offense struggle against those teams, and his offense this year was supposed to go, you know, win them games. We knew the defense was going to struggle a little bit. We had been talking about it all offseason, yeah. But mm-hmm. the offense, we were like, nobody's going to be able to stop this damn offense.
Yep.
And they stopped themselves oftentimes than not. And I think for Tom Herman, that was that's the man in the mirror moment. It's like, you know, against the best defenses, you struggled.
Well,
the best defense when you had the worst. Like, you know what I mean?
Since we talked about it a second ago, like, he can also look at it, what Ed O said after that LSU game. He's like, we knew we couldn't stop them. Well, then what happened the next 10 games where defenses
got
confidence to be able to step? Exactly.
You got worse.
And
yeah.
That's what I'm saying, though. Like, he
it's
needs
totally
to
right.
look at it like yeah. it's a good astonishing
and,
moment.
And Longhorn fans, quit comparing the Texas performance versus LSU.
Gosh.
To LSU beating Oklahoma. Do not do that. That is really
pointless.
Embarrassing to us, because real football people know that good football teams get better as the year goes on. More reps in games, better players get better. Better coaches get better. All right, and that's what happened to LSU. Right now, LSU would beat Texas. I'm honestly, I'm not joking. They beat them by 4 or 5 touchdowns.
Did the Texas offense? Did the Texas offense peak in that LSU
and
game?
And healthy.
Like when we look at the body of work,
that was the best they were. Oh yeah.
When we look at the body of work, did the offense peak in week 2?
It did, but that's not a peak
yep.
to me, because that was the second game of the season. Nobody knew who you were. But you're
exactly.
right. No, you're right. It's a bad peak because nobody knew who you were. So when all football is about is these nerds. And Jeff knows this, and Matt knows these nerds will sit in a dark room watching film for 18 hours out of 24 mm-hmm. hours a day. That's all they do. And they're even in the Saban-Belichick thing, they talk about it, right? They talk about how they basically break down a game,
mm-hmm.
all right? How they chart a game. And he said it takes them like 4 to 5 hours to chart a game. And I know that because I've done it. Where you're like, you're walking down first and 10. Oh, they got 7 now. Oh, they were in shotgun formation. Okay, so Shotgun with 2 back, shotgun with 1. Man, it takes forever, but throughout it, you learn a team really well. You intimately get to know a team if you do that through 8, 9, 10 games. And what teams started to get to know about Texas is they're predictable.
Yeah.
They're predictable, they're conservative, and that's why Texas versus LSU, to me, yes, it was great and it was awesome, but that was Joe Burrow as a baby. He was an infant. He was an infant in that offense. Now he's a full, mature adult, and he is wrecking shop. Dude, he would annihilate Texas right now.
Yeah.
He would humiliate. They would score 6 to 7 to 8 touchdowns in the first half.
You look at him and like, I was trying to think of what I can compare the Texas offense to. It's almost like Enron stock, right? Like, it went boom, shot up, and then off the cliff.
Bitcoin.
Off a cliff. And that's what football is, right, as the season goes on. Cowboys, remember that first game the Cowboys had? How awesome they looked.
Oh,
I was like, oh, my God, Cowboys are going to be in the Super Bowl.
And then you realize we're playing the NFC East and the AFC East.
How do you realize the NFL started to figure out, all right, this is what the Cowboys are doing. We figured this thing out. I mean, that's great coaching by LSU, because their players got better as the season wore on. Texas players got worse. Texas became more predictable. Texas was not a good football team toward the end of the year. So don't do that.
Even
that's
their pieces
not,
on defense, right? Like, we know, like, Derek Stingley's much better now than he was in his second game as a true freshman. Like, Kerry Vincent looks much better. Caleb Chason has gotten better.
Hell, even Delpit struggled versus
Texas.
The other DB that Eagles scored on, he hadn't done – Fulton, I think.
You're right, Christian Fulton.
Yeah.
Was struggling in that
blowing
game.
Up now.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was just trying to think. Maybe it was one of the Spurrier quarterbacks – Rod, I don't know if I – and I don't want to get too far off on this tangent.
No, I know about
But
Burke.
You look at the SEC Championship game and the Peach Bowl.
No, man.
I don't know that I've ever seen a quarterback at this level. Like what Vince Young did, that to me, that's different.
It is different.
But I don't know if I've ever seen a passer distributing the ball as locked in as Joe Burrow is.
The only thing on a lesser level, because it isn't the complexity of the offense, is the record he's about to break, because 08 Colt McCoy was in his own, but it was more from an organic relationship.
I was
going to
say, it was.
And it was very close to the line. As decisive he was, 2 or 3 options, but just how decisive he was, and then the ability to execute what his mind saw, but he had way more limitations on his offense. But it's the only thing that I've seen somebody that just went out there and you had total confidence, like,
No, I don't think anybody's going to stop this guy.
This is only because of the decisions
and schemes.
Yeah,
like you're just toying with people.
Yeah, they are. And I will say this, and I totally believe it. If you're Cincinnati and you draft Joe Burrow, you better draft Joe Brady. You better bring them together. Don't let them separate. That would be so stupid. Like, this guy, do you realize he was considered a guy that may not get drafted?
Yeah, before
like
the Texas game.
Like, 8-9 months ago, they were like, no, I don't know if he's going to get drafted. He's like a 58% completion percentage guy. Now he's at 78%? Are you serious?
You got to marry those two.
And that guy, and it's one, and we know one difference that came in, one factor that contributed to it mostly was Joe Brady coming in. If you are Cincinnati and you don't offer him not only co-OC job, but the, you know,
whatever he wants. Coach,
whatever the hell.
Yep,
with you.
All of it. Totos.
Yeah, you're right. You're Cincinnati. You're not the Patriots. You're not freaking.
See, that's
not
the problem. Yeah, that's what's going to screw you up. You're Cincinnati.
Right, you're not San Fran right now. You're not Green Bay. You're Cincinnati. Just give him the damn job as the OC. I'm with you. I'm sorry about that. You're right. I was being way too conservative.
It's almost
give him the
too
OC
easy.
Job. Pay him a ton of money and say, listen, just be Joe Brady's quarterback nurturer. Sorry, Joe Burrow's quarterback nurturer. Just nurture him and do what you did at LSU. We'll run whatever you want to run. Let's just do it. Because you know what? Honestly, Joe Brady's the difference, man. And it's unbelievable. And it shows you. It should show Tom Herman. This is the lesson, right? This is the lesson we all got to learn. That in a nature versus nurture discussion about quarterbacks, that it's more about nurture. Yes, the nature. You got to have something. You got to have some natural skills, right? Mike Lee says, never acquire a quarterback, never recruit them, never draft them, whatever, if they're not accurate. He's the one thing that he always says. I don't give a damn how tall he is. I don't give a damn.
The only common thing he has amongst all his QBs.
If he can't hit the bullseye when I need him to, then I don't want that guy on my roster, period. Yeah. And I kind of believe that too. But everybody's got their things physically that you have to kind of meet that criteria. But other than that, man, it's about nurture. Like, put him in, right, Lamar Jackson. We're seeing it at the NFL level. Like, we're seeing it at the college level. Sam Ellinger was considered better than Joe Burrow, and some people's, I think it was, man, if I'm not mistaken, Tom McShay had him as undrafted.
It was McShay, yeah.
It was McShay? Yeah. McShay knows his stuff. He's not a scrub. But I think that's what Joe Burrow was in everybody's eyes, and now he's the number one overall pick in the draft, and he's not even close. Guys, put him in the right system.
Yes.
This is what hurt me about Sam. Sam Ellinger, last year, coming off that sophomore season that he had, he had at least 25 touchdowns, at least 25 touchdowns passed, and at least 15 rushing touchdowns. And all the other quarterbacks in the BCS era who had done that had won Heisman trophies.
Yeah.
We were thinking to ourselves, oh, man, this dude is about to have a Vince Young, Colt McCoy-type year. And he really had a great year. But I think it was wasted because he didn't get better. I think Sam is basically the same quarterback he was his sophomore year.
When it ends statistically, the only season a Texas quarterback will have ever had that's better than what Sam Ellinger will have done this year is Colt McCoy in 08.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
No. And I will say this. I think I saw him make NFL throws. I saw him make, like, more NFL throws this year. But ultimately, Sam underachieved this year, and I don't think it's all his fault. Some of that is on him, of course, as a player. You got to take that onus. But
right.
The system that he was in, God. It really lowered his ceiling, man. It stunted his growth and development and evolution as a player. And when I watch Joe Burrow and I watch his ascent to greatness, I just can't think to myself, to Tom Herman, like, that should be a red alert to you. You had a guy that everybody said was better than Joe Burrow. And now Joe Burrow's better than your guy. Oh, he's better than everybody else in the country, too, by the way. But my point is, I think for Tom Herman, he's got to figure out, who's his Joe Brady? Is Mike Yersch that guy? If he is, great. But you got to figure out how to get the best out of Sam Ellinger because you're wasting a truly
proven commodity at that position, Rod. And in this program, how long has everybody been waiting for? For so long, we just wanted somebody who was competent. Now you have a guy that you know
extraordinary. It
can be a championship caliber guy. Like, you have enough evidence that you believe, okay, in the right set of circumstances, Sam Ellinger can go win you a championship.
Yep.
And when you talk about Mike Yersich and you look at the quarterbacks he's had, when he was at Oklahoma State, they won 10 games and nearly won the conference using a two-quarterback system with Clint Shelf and J.W. Walsh.
I remember that.
They went to a bowl game with Dax Garmon as their quarterback for most of the year. Hell, look what he got out of Taylor Cornelius. out of corn dog.
Corn dog, baby. Yeah.
You know?
And with corn dog. Your point on the just one player and changing like that catalyst that is able to do it, it's just so key because like you can look at NBA and you see it all the time marrying together. Like what was the Mark Jackson Steph Curry? It wasn't Steve Kerr version. Was the Jason Kidd Giannis? It wasn't Mike Budenholzer, the D'Antoni. Same idea. And it's like it's a cliche, but I heard about – I forgot who said it back in the day, but it was some coach talking about if you take away one compound and carbon dioxide will give you life, carbon monoxide will kill you. And like literally it's that changing one scientific compound in anything could make something totally blow up. Now, it's not to say that the one that you change is going to actually activate it, but if you get the right mind to marry with it, you don't have the opposite version where we were totally fooled in 1999 and didn't know who the hell. Look at Tim Couch throwing all over the SEC. First overall pick. It's like, well, that was the system doing it. Now, the guy was married in like, now we're on that opposite end where you can see that the marriage of the two can propel a guy because it really is absurd to think if Joe Burrow wasn't draftable, but now he's the best. It's sort of indicting of the system
Of
the scouts and everything.
Yes.
And not in, us not knowing that what we're watching and a few people really, really knowing, like your buddy Shano, who's like, when you were talking about watching film, he looks like a vampire right now because he's so pale from being inside looking at his stuff all the time.
You should,
like, that's what those people are. Rick Pitino's been a pale man his whole life. All he's been locked up. This is hilarious.
There's two.
Just marry those things.
There's two at the college level. There's two non-Texas examples that jump out to me for what you guys are talking about, and then two Texas examples that I want to touch on that Rod kind of encapsulates what you were talking about with the Sam Ehlinger dynamic. I think back to Carson Palmer the year he won the Heisman at USC. Like Carson Palmer was a highly recruited guy, and it just they went through a series of offensive coordinators and coaching changes.
And what did Pete Carroll do?
Hired Norm Chow, and then all of a sudden Carson Palmer, it's like, oh my God, that's the guy we all thought we were going to see. He's a Heisman winner, he's the number one draft pick. Carson Palmer was garbage for a few years at USC.
That's a good point.
And looked like a bust, and then all of a sudden, oh, he's a Heisman winner, number one pick in the draft. Kyler Murray going from Texas A&M to Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we talked about it last year, and I know there's people, oh, how's it going to work? I can tell you how it's going to work. They're going to win a lot of freaking games and put up a lot of freaking
Lincoln
numbers.
Because
it's Lincoln Riley and
again.
Kyler Murray. Like, Lincoln Riley is going to unlock things in Kyler Murray that Kevin Sumlin never had a chance to do.
Mm-hmm.
The two Texas examples are Vince Young. When was Vince Young really good? As has famously been said, when they just let Vince Young be Vince Young, when Greg Davis made the decision, look, if this is going to work, we got to go all in on Vince Young.
And marrying
whatever,
and
kind of what the Ravens are doing with Lamar Jackson.
Like whatever it takes, we're going to go all in on this guy.
He's that special.
If it's going to work. Was the difference then. It's the same reason that Vince Young and Chris Johnson ran for 2,000 yards in like the 2008 or whatever.
The other side of that for Texas was Garrett Gilbert.
Yeah.
And getting a guy who came from a sophisticated spread offense at Lake Travis, one with Jeff Dykus, one with Chad Morris, and you get him, and now you want to have like a put fullbacks on the field and
live
formation and get downhill.
Run game.
And you know, I go back to that staff meeting they had when they got back from Pasadena.
Maybe a young Chris Whaley at running back.
And the argument that I heard, and I'm sure I've told the story before, the argument I heard was on one side of the table was Mac McWhorter and Greg Davis kind of pounding the table. We need to be a downhill run team. We need to get in the I formation. We need to pound people. And on the other side was Will Muschamp saying, why the hell do we need to change what we're doing? It works.
If it ain't
broke, don't fix it.
Exactly. Because he's a defensive guy, and he was like, I can tell you what's whipping me.
Yeah.
These damn air raids.
Yes.
These air raid offenses are whipping me.
Y'all brought me to the Big 12, and I don't know what the hell this is.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, and I think that speaks to the talent Sam Ehlinger has, that even though, you know, in this year where the offense has been just so helter-skelter throughout the year, it's either been feast or famine. They're either great in putting up numbers or they're awful and they're a detriment to the cause. To put up the numbers he has just kind of shows you his talent, but that's the frustrating thing. It's no different, Rod, than Dak Prescott, right?
That's exactly right.
Like, when we talk about Texas and the Cowboys kind of mirroring each other, but I look at, to me, Sam Ehlinger and Dak Prescott are the same guy. Like, if you can really find somebody that can really unlock his game and play to his strengths and understand what he is and what he can do to play winning football, you're going to a lot of games with that guy. Is he perfect? No, but that's the challenge for you as an offensive coordinator or quarterback's coach to figure out, okay, this is what we need to do to make him successful more often than not. Are there going to be games where you're outnumbered or outmatched and they've got a better plan for you? Yeah, but you come back the next week, you fix it, and you move on and you roll with it.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. So I think football is getting to that. Tom Herman, I mean, I'm sure he's on that bandwagon. He's a progressive guy, but Sam Ehlinger's got to be a part of that discussion too. I mean, that's why he's thinking about the next level.
Yeah, and
that's probably why he's thinking about it, because the game is changing.
That's why you're a pro, Rod. Hell of a segue. Sam Ehlinger, as today as we record this, I was down in San Antonio for some Alamo Bowl stuff. Sam Ehlinger did confirm, as he should, that he filed the paperwork to the NFL's College Advisory Committee to get his grade back. Herb Hand told me Sam Cosmi did the same thing as a draft eligible sophomore. Rod, it's almost easier to talk about Cosmi because I think depending on what comes back, that could be a decision he's got to make.
Yeah, because he could end up easily getting a first-round grade. I could see that. And if he gets a first-round grade, you got to make that decision. Sam's not going to get a first-round grade.
No.
And, I mean, I think the grades are first, second, go back to school. Mm-hmm. If I'm not mistaken. Which I like that, actually, by the way. It's one of the things I like. First, and by the way, I think even Patrick Mahomes got a second.
Well, yeah, they never give you really.
So they always underestimate it because they don't want to be liable for you getting bad information. So usually, whatever you are, they get your grade. If it's high, they're going to drop you down probably 10, 15 spots.
Like Chase Young and CeeDee Lamb are getting first round grades.
Like if you're looking at projection, it's your floor projection.
Yeah, pretty much. So, you know, it's just smart business, though. I'm glad Sam's doing it. I think Cole did it 2008, too.
And then you get the feedback. Like, not only is it smart to test the fields, gauge things, or even just learn the process and get information, but then to get the feedback now, which has changed over the last 5 years,
agree.
It's even more advantageous where it incentivizes the kid, even if they aren't thinking about it. They want you, it's smart for you to go do it.
Yeah. You're the group of guys that did it last year. You know, Colin Johnson did it.
Yeah.
I think LJ Humphrey did it. Malcolm Roach, I know, was the guy that put his name in there. So, yeah, I mean,
it's good business. I would have done it if it was available back in the day. I mean, I'd have done it. And I would have been leaving.
Free NFL consultation?
But I'd have just did it just to see where I got. I mean, see where I stood.
I mean, literally, it's a free consultation from the NFL.
It's just free consultation.
While you're in college.
So, I think it's just a smart move by Sam. I don't think Sam's leaving. I don't think no matter what grade Sam gets, he ain't leaving. I think if Sam gets a first-round grade, he ain't leaving. I seriously believe that. Because I always said, Sam always dreamt of being a Longhorn player, and he always wanted to be the quarterback for the Texas Longhorns. I don't think he's ready for that ride to end, especially after this season. Now, if they had won, you know, 10, 11 games and went to another big-time bowl game, I ain't gonna lie, if he gets a good grade, he might be thinking about, you know what, I like the way things are going. I don't think he wants his story at Texas to end with a 7, potentially 8-win season.
Yeah, Texas is lucky. It's the love of his life.
Yeah, like, and it ain't got nothing to do with Herman either, because I know people are like, well, if he leaves, that means it's, you know, it's a bad reflection of Herman. That's true. I believe that. If he leaves, that means stuff is really effed up back
loved.
There behind the burnt orange curd. Exactly. But I don't think that's going to happen, because I don't think the reason he came to Texas had anything to do with Tom Herman. Jeff Howe could have been coaching Texas, and Sam Ehlinger still would have come to Texas.
Yes.
It could have been the 88th ranked recruiting class in the country, and Sam Ehlinger still would have come to Texas. Mm-hmm. Osama bin Laden could have been coaching Texas, and he still would have come to Texas. He loves
I'm out of advised against that. But
yeah, I know, but you get my point. Like, he still would have come to Texas.
Go and fight for Texas.
Yeah, like he just loves the brand. It's the kind of guy you want, actually, by the way.
We've seen the baby photo.
So I think we all agree that Sam Ehlinger is not going to get a first-round grade. But it's one of those deals, Rod, like, can't win the lottery unless you buy a ticket, right?
I agree, brother. Yeah. And he made NFL throws this year. There were some throws, I could think of 4 or 5 of them on the top of my head, where I was like, that was an NFL throw.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them to Devin Duvernay. But that's that's why that helps. But I think he matured. I think he had been typecast for a while because everybody kept throwing, he's a mini Tim Tebow. Reminds me of Tim Tebow. Like every broadcast, he reminds me of Tebow. Bam, bam, bam. Well, actually, I came with Bam, bam, bam. They weren't saying that, but you get my point. Everybody had viewed him as a guy, basically a fullback playing quarterback. And I think this year, even though they should have used him more as a runner, I was actually upset they didn't use him more as a runner. I think he broke the mold of that typecast and that stigma and that reputation that, oh, man, he's just a running quarterback that can throw it at times. No, Sam can sit back in the pocket and pick you apart. Of course, the LSU game, I think, really threw him on that platform. People saw what he did versus LSU.
Right.
So I think Sam is on his way to getting NFL scouts. I remember, I think it was Lewis Riddick that threw it out there about, you know, he watched him at the camp at
Bucky Brooks.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, Bucky Brooks.
At Elite 11.
Yeah, at the Elite 11 camps. And he said something about Sam's throwing ability. And so, yeah, I mean, I think Sam's getting some NFL attention. That's what he should.
Yeah, the Cosmi situation to me is interesting because, I mean, young, athletic, offensive tackle who's, I mean, I don't know that all of Cosmi's film, if you start breaking it down this year, is going to be great film, especially when you talk about an offensive line that and gave up more sacks than anybody in the Big 12. But Rod, it wouldn't completely shock me if he got a grade to where he really has to say, "Well, I need to sit down and think about this."
Yeah, Cosme.
I'm
probably
not saying it's
going
to happen, but it wouldn't shock me.
I mean, he was getting first round noise
projections.
I would say.
Yeah,
first round. He was getting some first round love, I think, in the preseason when they were doing like, I don't know, way too early draft, mock drafts and stuff. So I wouldn't doubt that. You know, I mean, even Colin Johnson last year was getting way too early first round draft love. So I mean, guys can get that, but as
Brandon Jones' name pop up,
that doesn't mean a damn. I'm gonna tell you right now, it doesn't mean a damn.
Yeah,
I mean, those guys could, if the NFL falls in love with them, the draft process is so long, it's so arduous, so many ways for you to fall off, so many ways for you to lose stock value. Anybody thought Lil Jordan Humphrey was gonna go undrafted coming out?
If the right eyeball see you,
they love you. I think Devin Duvernay right now is not on a lot of people's. You know, he's not on that radar, but I think once he goes through the draft process, people look at him, look at his background, skill set, they're going to fall in love with Duvernay. He's going to shoot up. He's going to skyrocket up draft boards.
And if he doesn't,
he'll do what Pete Carroll
will pick him up.
No, he will. I think he'll shoot up draft board. But some guys don't fall off draft boards just because of, maybe the position that they're in is really loaded that year, whatever it is. It's just so many different factors that are outside of your control.
And here's the bottom line. For me on the draft stuff, both those guys, I would almost guarantee both those guys are coming back. Like, I think Cosme could maybe have a decision to make, but I tend to think both those guys are coming back. If they do, Rod, then you get to January and both those guys can put out public statements. Obviously I weighed the NFL process. I've decided to return to Texas.
Yep.
If you're Tom Herman, you spin that into a PR positive. And
yeah.
Lord knows this program needs as many PR positives as they can get in the offseason.
This is true. Yeah, especially when it comes to players and guys wanting to be loyal to the program.
And I think, we know what's at stake for Sam Ehlinger going into his senior year, but I think if Cosme comes back, he's probably a preseason All-American type guy. He's in that consideration.
Should be, no question.
He's a Big 12 honors guy, national honors candidate, all that fun stuff going into next year.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. And I think both of those guys will end up coming back, but I'm with you. Sam Cosme, he may be the one to decision to make. I don't think there's anything to worry about.
Maybe
a decision to make. No, it would just be smart. I mean, listen, I've always said if you can go get paid, all right, for reps, you need to go get paid for reps. And a guy like Sam Cosme, second round, to me, honestly, second round money in NFL is good money. I don't know. Yeah. And people are like, second round, he could be a first round. I'm like, dude.
Ask Connor Williams how good that second round money is.
Second round money is good money. Right now, you're just playing for the second contract anyway. Everybody's playing for the second contract because they got the rookie wage scale.
Get you there quicker,
too. Yeah, you're trying to get there quicker. So, if he gets a second round grade, I can see Cosme going, I'm out, man. I'm second round. I'm good. I'll get a few $1 million signing bonus. I'll be okay.
Yeah. Well, the next time we'll see Sam Ehlinger and Sam Cosme both is going to be in the Alamo Bowl on New Year's Eve. Rod, are you heading down there?
I am not heading down there, actually. So, I don't have to go. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm not going to San Antonio. If I don't have to go to San Antonio, I'm not going. I'm not going to lie to you. I love Texas football, but if I don't have to go to San Antonio, I'm not going. So
okay.
I won't be at the game, but, of course, I'll be covering the game.
Real quick, I don't want to belabor this point. What is the official Longhorn Blitz? What do we put our stamp on San Antonio? Yay or nay?
I love San Antonio. I'm a big fan, but
I'm from Austin, so like I only go to San Antonio for an event. Like you guys, and like I only go there. A Spur game, or like I had a work gig to do something, but like it's always sort of coming back to Austin.
I disagree with Charles Barkley. I think they got fine women because I've dated women from San Antonio, and they got some fine women. So trust me, that ain't the issue. The food is damn good. They do have damn good food too. It's the fourth best city in Texas. What do you want me to say? And they know that. They should know
that.
That
should be a compliment.
Exactly. Am I being hateful
there? 4 out of 1,000.
You're not better. They're not better in Austin. Everybody in Houston, not better in Dallas. All right. Like we all know that. I'm just saying what's true.
Can you put them 5 behind Fort Worth?
Well, and then even
I think
some
I
people.
Can I do Fort Worth as a DFW thing, so I put all that together. Yeah, you know what I mean? But you're right. You probably could if you wanted.
Because Dallas is a little bit like
Oklahoma. I won't go there. I like San Antonio. I'm not dissing San Antonio, but if I don't have to go, I'm not.
I think to me, it's just like
got spoiled. I'm from Austin. He's like, no reason to go there. What are you gonna do better there?
I think my thing with San Antonio is like the Alamo Dome is just such like to me, it just feels like such a soul crushing, depressing place to be that. to me, it like brings down the rest of the city.
I know, and everybody wants it to San Antonio to be like another like a major sports town. You know, the Spurs, of course, great. Love the Spurs, dynastic. We all know that. But, you know, there have been talks about bringing a Major League Baseball team there, bringing a Major League Soccer team there, you know, NFL team potentially coming there. And we all know it's never going to happen. There's no chance.
You want to get San Antonio people give you some hot sports opinions and get rowdy rod. Bring up Austin getting an MLS franchise and San Antonio not getting
it. But the
truth
is, Austin has more money than San Antonio. That's why San Antonio will never get it, because Austin has more billionaires. People think it's crazy. Just go count the number of billionaires per city and like kind of per state, and usually that's where your large sports franchises are. Uh-huh. And Houston. Lots of billionaires. Dallas, lots of billionaires. Austin actually has more billionaires than San Antonio. We got 10 or 15. We got 10 billionaires here, like around here.
They only got Red McCombs, probably.
Well, actually, I don't know, but I want to say we got more billionaires than San Antonio. I don't know what the number is exactly, so don't.
But like with the Alamo Dome, it's like, you know, San Antonio put in a bid with the CFP committee to host a national championship game, and it's almost like, can you see Bill Hancock like patting just the city of San Antonio on the head and be like, Thanks for the bid, little buddy. Appreciate that.
I like the Alamo Bowl, though. I've heard it's a good bowl. They like the Alamo Bowl.
The bowl people and the committee and the organization is fine. And
56
great.
Billionaires in Texas, though, just so you know. I got that. I don't know how many are in Austin, but 56 in Texas. There you go.
But anyway, enough about the Alamo Dome. Let's talk about the bowl game. Rod, when I look at this game, we've talked about this, and I've looked at it from a number of different ways. And one advantage Texas has in this game is the Texas passing game against the Utah secondary, which is depleted. We knew Julian Blackman and RJ Hubert, two of their safeties, were going to be out with injuries. Now, Jalen Johnson, their All-American corner, doesn't even make the trip. He's declared for the NFL draft, and he's skipping the bowl game. So this is a Utah secondary with two All-Americans who will not be on the field. They moved Jason Shelley, their backup quarterback, to safety for this game to get him ready just so they can have depth. If Sam Ehlinger has time to get rid of the football, Texas has an advantage there. But, Rod, as we talked about with this game, when this matchup was announced, if the Texas offensive line cannot deal with the Utah defensive front, nothing else in this game is going to matter.
Yeah, I will say this, though. I don't know. Maybe I just had too much time to my homerism to start, you know, flaring up. I think Texas is gonna beat Utah.
I like it.
I know. It sounds okay. Just hear me out, and you guys let me know if I'm crazy and insane. This is the research that I've done.
Go for it. We'll break it down.
Because there's only three games really this year where Utah's even struggled at all. They have the two losses, of course, right? Lost to USC, lost to Oregon, and then there's the Washington game that was within 5 points. That's the only games that are really been within one score or they lost. Other than that, they've blown everybody. No need to even watch the other games because they really don't give you kind of a true representation of them, of Utah under pressure.
Right.
And also, one of the things in common about those three games is they're all away from home. True. At Washington, at USC, and the Pac-12 title game was at Levi, I believe, where the Santa Clara, yeah. Right? So, away from home. A little bit of a different team, which I think everybody is, right? Even Texas' best offensive game, they were at home versus LSU, versus K-State, away from home. Texas standard. Sucked offensively, right? Standard. So I think that, I know people are like, oh, well, that's
a built-in advantage of Texas.
But it is in Texas. That's a huge home field advantage for Texas.
Especially for
a
bowl because you're away even longer. This is a week-long one.
Utah, and Utah's a really good team, but when they've played against teams who, in the Pac-12, we can all say with confidence, have a clear, decisive talent advantage over Utah. Who? USC.
Yep.
Oregon.
Washington.
Probably Washington. Everybody else, you're like, UCLA? Nah, I'm not sure. Cal? I'm not sure. Arizona State? I'm not sure. But we know Washington, Oregon, USC, talent advantage over Utah. Utah knows Texas has a talent advantage over Utah. Everybody knows that. Everybody, that's not a question. Yo, even in the Big 12, Texas has a talent advantage over everybody in the Big 12 other than Oklahoma, but that doesn't mean they're going to beat them. It just means talent advantage. But that is something all those other three teams have in common. If you go look at the best quarterbacks that Utah has played, who are the best quarterbacks they've played in the Pac-12? Justin Herbert.
Justin Herrera, Jacob Eason.
Jacob Eason at Washington.
I mean, Keaton Slovis.
And whoever the hell USC tried out
there.
They
brought in like their third string.
Oh, yeah, Slovis was hurt, wasn't he? It was Matt, yeah, he, was it Matt Fink?
Matt Fink came in. Yeah. Matt Fink came in.
They went through three of them.
I want to say, yeah, you're right. Matt Fink came in because Slovis, I think, started the game and got hurt.
And it was Slovis had just started the game before, blew everybody away. Then he got hurt. So Fink came in, and I was like, damn, Graham Harrell, you're throwing all over him with your third stringer in the second half.
So I'm just throwing it out there. I think Sam Ehlinger is not as good as Herbert. But Herbert, by the way, didn't kill him passing the ball. He ran it down the throat. Oregon's first team to actually run it down the throat. USC ran for, I want to say like 53 yards. And, man, Washington ran for like a 20-something yard. It was like nobody was able to run the ball on Utah all year long. And then Oregon did it at the end of the year. Though, and Justin Herbert really didn't kill him, but he made some big-time throws downfield once the running game got going, play-action pass, deep downfield. So I'm just looking at the three or four different things that the teams that gave Utah trouble had in common. Elite quarterback play, or close to elite quarterback play, Texas has that. Decisive, clear talent advantage, Texas has that. USC's going to be away from home. Utah's going to be from home. Texas has that, all right, that advantage because they'll be playing in Texas, in San Antonio. And honestly, I may be wrong about this. Maybe I'm being a homer. I think Texas has the best wide receiving core, other than like USC. USC's got a really good one too that Utah will face all year.
With a healthy
Collin Johnson is healthy.
He's healthy. I was at practice on Saturday watching him run around, a little bit on Sunday.
Yeah.
He's playing.
USC's wide receiving core is legit. I love it. Amara St. Brown, Michael Pittman, like they're loaded. Mm-hmm. They got a lot of guys that Texas would love to have those guys too.
Yeah,
we had one of them at one point.
Right,
Brew McCoy. So, but Texas with a healthy Collin Johnson, guys, even LSU had issues trying to cover both of those guys and a healthy Brandon Eagles on the outside. That's going to give any secondary issues, I promise you. When Collin Johnson wasn't healthy, of course, Texas couldn't use that advantage and take the top off of defense and also have Devin Duvernay working underneath. But both those guys can beat man-to-man coverage. You have to double both of them. They both have gravity, meaning the safeties will be linebackers will be attracted to them. I think that matchup is going to give Utah some issues. On the other side, Utah is the best defense that Texas will face probably since the 2010 Nebraska defense, statistically. It is the best defense they will face since 2010 Nebraska.
In terms of their
2010 Nebraska was pretty good.
Well, I know. I'm just saying.
We beat that team. Yes.
In terms of their production, their presence, Rod, I agree with
you.
Ain't
all over them.
The difference is there's obviously no Ndamukong Suh. Yes, Bradley and I has, 12 and a half sacks?
Yeah, and they got some players.
But, Matt, you've got the Football Outsiders numbers pulled up. And when I started looking at Utah, there were some numbers that, okay, correlate. Like, I think they're 15th in the country in their defensive line in terms of defending the run. Yep. I think they're 15th in the country in standard down line yards, 17th, I want to say, in line and just regular line yards per carry. I might have those mixed up. But I started looking at, like, stuff rate, I think they're like 45th.
Yep.
Their sack rates, I think, are in the 50s and 60s. So
yep.
In terms of that production, I was like, okay, not as robust as I thought it was going to be.
It's not truly a disruptive defensive
there
line.
You go,
you're initially
Rod,
like, they're going to be really disruptive. It's like, yeah. Actually, no. They're just really, really disciplined and fundamentally sound. But they don't – even Baylor's defensive line arguably is more disruptive.
Oh, no, without question.
Without question. There you
go. Yeah. Yeah, and you brought it up, but just, I mean, going back to the Oregon game, against Oregon, it was C.J. Verdell just went all over them. But if you look at, like, the advanced box score and start breaking down some of the numbers, like, Oregon had no passing downs. They only threw the ball six times in passing downs. They were just in standard downs the whole time. They just ran, and that's the main thing. If Texas can win the battle up front, like Jeff said, nothing overwhelming on the D-line, very good. But if you can, like, have schematically helped out your guys and get a few holes opened up on the line and do a few things just to be average, just to be able to keep on schedule and then be able to throw in some type of standard situations, they should be able to get manipulated because Oregon
Oregon just obliterated them, and it was strictly because Herbert, all he was doing was had them in situations where they didn't know what was coming and was able to throw all over them. They had six passing downs the entire game, and they won 37-14. So
they were throwing it on rundowns. When they would throw it,
And then you have Verdell going 18 rushes for 208 yards, and then that Oregon offensive line, which wasn't here. I'll look it up real quick. But
that's one of the best O-lines in the country, though. I will say that, too.
Yeah, I mean, but still,
Oregon,
They rate, though, if you look just to, like, line yards per carry, Texas, much better than Oregon. Now, that's indicting of what Texas's production is. But if you look at Oregon finished 38th, 26th, and then, I guess, 81st on pass downs. But you're talking top 25. Texas was in the top 10, top 11, and then 39th overall. So at least when you look at that, then it's up to your skill guys to make guys miss. That Verdell dude is electric. He made a lot of guys miss. But who knows, maybe that could be indicting of some tackling. It's going to come down to the basic stuff. Texas, don't miss tackles. Hopefully you can get your guys in space, make some missed tackles, and then you got a good little recipe.
Ron, I think this is a game for Texas offensively where I would like to see them do things that can attack the structural integrity of the Utah defense. And what I mean by that is can you use motion? Can you do some more, you know, bunch formations and things that we've talked about
speed
all
up
year.
A little bit more.
Some 20 personnel, some tempo.
Yeah.
Just try to get them out of sorts, because man, this is a game, if you just let them hang back in their base defense and just play you straight up, they will eat you alive.
But I do like the matchup, because I want to know how they're going to play Colin Johnson and Duvernay in the slot.
I haven't seen anything like that.
I know it sounds crazy, but man, and Duvernay's been so disrespected in the postseason.
We had a press conference days Saturday and Sunday this week, and Texas had their defensive press conference. The Utah defense went like, Morgan Scalley is just sitting there by himself, so I was like, when am I going to get to chop it up with Morgan Scalley again? Probably never. So I went over there and talked to Morgan Scalley for about 10 minutes.
Nice.
And he loves Devin Duvernay.
Who doesn't?
I love Duvernay.
to the point where he's
like the kid Duvernay. He's like, how do you say the kid's last name? I was like, Duvernay. He's like, Duvernay.
There you go.
Love that kid.
Duvernay.
Yeah. No, because he is. I mean, I'm telling you, like, he's so productive. He's the one constant this year, even more so than Sam Cosmi. Or Sam Ellinger. He's the constant. It's
his
him.
Success could almost it's been unbelievable. So indicting because why wouldn't you want to funnel everything through him?
I remember being excited that 50% of Colin Johnson's targets last year resulted in a first down, a touchdown.
Duvernay.
For Duvernay, it's like 54%.
We started the year over 75%.
He has more receiving first downs than any player in the country.
And what do we figure? Like probably 60% of his receptions are within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage?
Yeah. So, I mean, I know they're going to have an issue with him. And I know they're going to devote two guys to him. If they don't, they're stupid. And Scalley's a way smarter guy than I am. So he's going to devote two guys to him. What are you going to do about that other freak out there, Colin Johnson?
Which is why a healthy Colin Johnson, I mean, is the X factor.
That's what I'm saying. So, to me, you got a guy that can take the top off the defense because you're going to put a safety on the top of him. If you don't, oh, man, all day, every day, Sam's going. And Sam's deep ball is beautiful and it's pretty and it's going to land right there for a healthy Colin Johnson. And who, by the way, who knows? And he said that he doesn't regret his decision to come back, all right? And I think that was a smart decision for him to come back. Hell, Lil Jordan Humphrey, now looking back, probably should have come back too. But I would say that Colin Johnson was getting first-round love. I got it written down in one of my pads of all the mock drafts I read where he was projected as a first-rounder. I had like five or six different mock drafts where, like, no, he's a first-round guy. And I think him coming back, and he understands, like, I got injured. It didn't go the way he got. But he's a legacy guy, so I think he's in it for a deeper cause and even hell, he's on not even more so than Sam Ellinger. But he understands. I think his dad has explained to him, this game, though, everybody knows you've been hurt all season. Everybody understands that. But this game?
Yeah, showcase.
You have one of them games where you had in the Big 12 title game where you go out for 100 and something, 90 something receiving yards or whatever it is. Everybody will forget all about the season and go, that's the guy that deserves to be drafted in the first round. Don't even forget about that season. That's the guy.
If he has one of those games, then going into the Senior Bowl, he's a guy that people will be talking about, like, okay, keep an eye on.
Both those guys are going to Senior Bowl,
Roy
right?
Those two guys and
Brandon Jones.
They'll raise their draft stock because they'll be really good in one-on-ones and all that. My point is, I don't think Utah has an answer for that. Their answer will be getting pressure on Sam to try to nullify or mitigate the damage done in the passing game. That'll be the only way they can answer that because nobody can really answer that. Hell, even LSU, I think, had issues trying to answer that conundrum. We're trying to figure it out.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, just thinking about how Texas is going to attack Utah. Cade Brewer is going to be healthy for this game. He is going to play.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's big, too.
So that brings up the question, though, Rod. Like, to me, and this, I'll bring up the Cade Brewer argument we've had all year. Okay. If you're going to have him on the field, then this goes like everything we talked about the offense boils down to this. If you're going to have him on the field, use him in a way that maximizes his skills.
Yeah.
Like, asking Cade Brewer to go be Andrew Beck is not a good way of maximizing his skills.
No.
If you want to put Cade Brewer, like, in a – you want to run doubles or you want to run a 3-by-1 or whatever and get him detached from the formation, great. That's a great use of Cade Brewer's skill set.
I think he needs to be used more in deception.
If you want to do that, too,
you know
fine.
I mean? Misdirection, but deception, delayed releases.
Something other than just put your hand on the ground, go block somebody.
Yeah,
I don't want to do that.
This is where you do a disservice to Cade Brewer. I think both ways. Put your hand in the ground, go block somebody like Andrew Beck, he and Andrew Beck. Or, just split out wide and beat your Michael Finley. You ain't that either. Okay?
Yeah,
you
ain't respected, so yeah, scheme him open
so
the backside of a play.
You gotta scheme him open backside of the play, the delayed release and the, you know, the misdirection.
If you watch the Saints
and using
today,
the play
the
action,
wide
the
open
pop
on
pass.
The back. Yes.
Yeah, like, I think you're using him in the wrong way. Put him in the backfield and have him, you know, block and then motion out and go to the other side of the formation. I just think they assume that he's, you know, I don't know. They assume he's like some legit first-round prospect at tight end. It's like, I don't think you have that.
No.
What you need to do is be able to scheme him in a different way to get him open. And they just allow him. I'll just put him out. We're going to run 4 wide. I have 11 set, and then we'll be fine. He'll get open. It's like, no. He doesn't get open. He doesn't get open.
Cade
and
Brewer.
He also doesn't do a great job of walling off one part of the defensive line.
And
he's not elite at anything necessarily.
That's what I was going to say.
And you're treating him like that. It's like
but
that you're doing a disservice to him as a coach.
You can use that weakness and get that disrespect from the opponent and find ways to get him open.
That's
exactly
what they did
like
with Andrew Beck. Because they would use Andrew Beck, but he had elite quality.
You look at the two Texas tight ends in the NFL right now. And really the last three, if you go look at Jermichael Finley.
Yeah.
Like Jermichael Finley, Jeff Swaim, Andrew Beck.
Yep.
What do all three of those guys have in common?
Wayne
they
Lee
all did
Steel.
One thing elite. Swaim and Andrew Beck, elite blockers.
Exactly. No,
elite inline blockers.
Go back even further. I said about Boskave. Boskave could be a good blocker. Boskave, you put him on a route. Boskave need to be matched up against a linebacker, a safety. I'm going to get open.
David Thomas.
If Tom Herman had Tyrone Swoops, he would love Tyrone Swoops right now the way Seattle uses
him. You spread Jermichael Finley out, you're basically in 10 personnel.
He's a wide receiver. So my point is, it's why it's bad coaching because – neither you guys need to develop him to be whatever you want him to be. Since you're not doing that, then you need to put him in a scheme that will, like you said, it will highlight his strengths and it will also be able to kind of minimize the damage done by his weaknesses. And they don't do that with him. They've done disservice. Cade Brewer's a damn good football player. They've done disservice to him.
Yeah.
Like a lot of guys on that football team.
Yeah.
They know that. That's why they're hiring new staff.
Exactly.
You gotta say, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
So, yeah, I'm with you, though. But I didn't know Cade Brewer was going to be healthy. That's big, man. He needs to, you know what? And I'll say it's crazy. O.J. Simpson is the way I got this idea. O.J. Simpson. I don't know why.
Didn't think we were going to have that segment coming up today.
OJ on Twitter, dude. Every now and then he comes up with my Twitter feed. People retweet him. I don't follow him, but he comes up with my Twitter feed.
Same here. I've heard some of these things.
Right. Have you heard this rant about him? They need fullbacks. They need more fullbacks in the NFL. More fullbacks. More fullbacks. And I know it sounds crazy because he's a murderer and you shouldn't listen to what the hell he says, all right?
Well,
but
and the thought process, unless you're a Shanahan, you don't know how to use fullbacks in the modern game.
No, but think about the teams that are using fullbacks. It is Shanahan, and it is the Patriots are using fullbacks now. The Ravens are using fullbacks now.
Oh, yeah.
And the point is, they are what they're doing is they're basically using guys who have elite skill sets, like he's an elite blocker or he's an elite receiver.
Specialized skills.
Boom. And we're gonna put him in a position to be successful. And I don't see enough of that with Tom Herman, like, you know what I mean, with his players. You know what I mean? Using him in a specialty position, essentially. Duvernay, but honestly, Duvernay is not Tom Herman. Don't give Tom Herman props for that, because that's the H position within his offense. Everybody who plays that damn position is really productive. Devin Duvernay's just a freak.
DeMarcus Ayers, Linnell Bonner, little Jordan Humphrey.
That's just how his offense is built. I want you to expand for the other guys within this offense. You know what I mean?
Yes, it almost basically simplified the way that, like, you would hear NBA people talk about, well, now we gave all these switching defenses, it comes down to an ISO, and it's just going to be not the Warriors anymore. It's just Durant's jumper. It's the same idea with Tom Herman, that it's like, well, you know, you have Duvernay, you want to funnel it through him, but he also could cause him to become too reliant upon thing that it's not using him to the versatile skill set that then makes you predictive.
Well, I think what Rod's talking about is simpler than that. To me, Rod, you can correct me if I'm wrong. Like, you should get to the point where Brennan Eagles should be able to do more than just run a nine route.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, yeah. Everybody's been Colin put Johnson. Into a cookie cutter shell. Yeah. And they are what that's they kind are, of my it's thing. It's very easy.
Yeah. That's kind of my thing. And I think that's what's kind of holding the offense back just a little bit. Is that I think it's too rigid in your roles. Like, you got to do this, and you do this. Yep. You really, and I understand that. That's some of it. But, man, it didn't work this year, though. It
yeah,
didn't
work.
Yeah,
we've talked a lot about it over the last month.
Yeah, it didn't
in
work.
Detail,
I'm not saying your thought process is wrong or your ideology.
Right.
But we can all agree, like, I got the numbers. It didn't work. Yeah. You got to figure out why it didn't work.
One thing I saw at practice on Saturday, I noted this on the site. I don't know if this is something they're going to do, if they do it and haven't used it. There was a period where Roshan Johnson's taking direct snaps and working like read option stuff with the other running backs.
That's sexy.
So I don't know if that's like I look at Roshan Johnson, and this is all I kept thinking when I was watching that period, Rod. Because I was down on the offensive end of the field. Defense wasn't doing anything.
Yeah.
I was down on the offensive end. We were out there for about 20 minutes, and maybe it was 30. I don't remember. But anyway, I kept watching Roshan Johnson, and I don't know if it was the number two or whatever, but all I kept thinking was, man, I just wonder what Brian Harsin could have done with this guy. Knowing how much, and Brian Harsin was a guy like you're talking about. He could take guys and figure out, okay, maybe he doesn't do this, but he does this really well.
Exactly.
And I'm gonna have him do that.
Yeah, I'm gonna put him in this role. Yeah. He does. And I think Tom Herman is good at evaluation, but I think now you do have to kind of go back, because once you lose Colin Johnson and Devin Duvernay, you have to go back to some evaluation and development. Because I can tell, other than I know Jake Smith has stepped up, but you know I can tell you who's gonna be. Brandon Eagles has shown flashes too, but I can tell you who's gonna be the guy for this offense.
That's part of going back to the Yurcich conversation. That's part of Tom Herman. You need to be less concerned about what you're doing from an offensive game plan standpoint on a week to week basis. You know, you need to make sure you've got the stuff like we're talking about with game plan stuff. You need to make sure you've hired competent coaches that can take care of a lot of that stuff
and can develop.
You've got to get back to getting back with Yancey McKnight and worrying about player development and asking coaches, why are we not using Cade Brewer in such and such way? Or asking your defensive coordinator, why do you keep having calls where Joseph Osai is 30 yards off the line of scrimmage?
Yep.
That's the stuff Tom Herman needs to get back to doing.
No, I totally agree. No, I'm serious. That's why I say Cade Brewer, getting back to the initial discussion. He should be used as a fullback more, too. And he did that. It's strange. When he brought Reese Latow in, once Cade Brewer got hurt, started using him as the fullback. That guy should be your – I'm with the Juszczyk Shanahan role. Find a guy that can be that.
Yes.
That you can be – because with Beck Wells, he was tight end, H-back, fullback, whatever the hell he needs to be within there. He's based,
that's why the Patriots got him to be that.
Yeah, like, find that guy. And I think Cade Brewer can actually be that guy. And since he won't be elite at one thing, then you can actually make him competent at a lot of different things and therefore still make him either a, you know, he can either be on any given play, he can be the guy or a focal point, or you can have him using misdirection or different things.
Let's look at the Texas defense against the Utah offense and – you know, Jeffrey McCulloch started the week down in San Antonio. He got asked, you know, how is Utah similar to some Big 12 offense? He's like, well, I don't want to give away what we're talking about behind closed doors, but there are some similarities. So I started looking at it. I was like, okay, kind of who does Utah look like? And I reached out to Steve Bartle, our Utah publisher at 24/7 Sports. And because I'll be honest, Rod, I didn't have the time, the energy, or the patience to go watch a bunch of Utah film and figure out.
I watched three games.
Beyond, you know, yeah. I watched the Oregon game. I think that was the only full game I watched. I watched some of the Colorado game. And
yeah, I watched like a little bit
of the Washington game. But I was like, Steve, like, just tell me like what their personnel, like what personnel groupings over the long haul they like. And he's like, well, they're probably 50% 12 personnel, probably 35% 11, and then the rest of it's split between they'll run some 13, they'll run some 21, they'll run some 10.
Yeah.
So I started thinking, okay, diverse formations, that's kind of Iowa State. Iowa State's all over the place.
If they have tight
with
ends.
With their formation. Yep. Iowa State will get in. They'll run some 13 personnel.
They'll run 12 on you.
Mm-hmm. But then I started thinking, okay, like from a personnel standpoint, who are they like? And to me, they're kind of, to me, a hybrid of like Oklahoma State and Baylor. And what I boil that down to from a simplistic standpoint is, what would a backfield look like if you had Charlie Brewer, who's a guy with functional mobility, accurate passer, heady guy, guy you trust to run your offense, good distributor of the football, with Chuba Hubbard? That's basically what Utah's got with Tyler Huntley and Zach Moss.
Yeah, you're right about that.
I started thinking, okay, well, stylistically, let's start looking at the numbers and the philosophy and who does Utah remind me of. And I came up with it. I started looking at it, and Craig Kniver said this is the game plan they're going off of. They look at Utah and see a lot of K-State.
Okay.
And here's where the numbers match up, Rod. I broke some of this down. Utah's run play percentage, they run the ball 63.7% of the time, second among Power 5 programs. K-State's 10th. They're about 68.8% run percentage. Time of possession, Utah second in the country, K-State fourth. Remember, Utah's number 12 in the country in third down conversion rate, K-State's 28th. This is the number. I remember I brought this number up when Texas played K-State, and it still holds true. K-State defense has faced 713 plays. Okay. It's the least of any FBS defense in the country. And now remember what we talked about, because we started looking at the numbers, Matt. We started looking at yards per play and these different metrics. Like, K-State's defense, they're not good. Mm-hmm. They're just doing a really good job of not exposing them.
Exactly.
The Utah defense we know is good, but Utah, they face 757 plays, ninth fewest among any FBS defenses. So Utah, from a stylistic fundamental standpoint, not fundamentals, but just a stylistic standpoint, they want to do what K-State did.
Yeah.
They want to take the air out of the ball. They want to be really good on third down. They want to bleed the clock, and they want to have you looking up in the fourth quarter saying, crap, we've only won like 40 plays. There's 7 minutes left in this game. We're down 10.
Using all three phases to beat you instead of just over-relying on one phase.
Because Kyle Whittingham typically has really good punters and kickers.
Yeah. That makes sense, though. I totally agree with you. That's trouble, though, for Texas.
Right. What could Texas do? You go back to their Iowa State, their K-State game plan. What was one of the – there's two things they did. There's a lot of times where they played Joseph Osai closer to the line of scrimmage, which we talked about. Why weren't you doing that most of the year? Second thing was, remember, they started Moro Ojimo in that game and brought him in on early downs to give you a true, kind of beefy, true four-man front.
Yeah.
Everybody was screaming all year about four-man front.
Yeah.
And they'll see it in this game and be like, see, why weren't they doing it all year?
Well, because you're going up against heavier personnel.
Yes.
Thank you. You're going against 12 and 11 and really 12 and 13 personnel. You need more bodies. You need more size. You need some girth.
Running attack.
So I think that's what you're going to see. If you go back and think back to the K-State game, Texas defensively, that I think is what you're going to see, because they know when Utah throws the football, they're either throwing it to – they're doing one or two things. They're either throwing it to Kuthi, their tight end, who's their leading receiver, who they use as a fullback, and they'll do different things with him because he's 6'2", 230 pounds. They'll do some different things with him. Or they're throwing it deep.
Yeah, they don't want to waste their passing game.
Right.
When they do pass it, they're going to make it count.
Yeah,
they're going downfield with it.
Run.
It's built off play
and
action
pass.
They
have a limited amount of plays, like Jeff was saying, on just their hope to not only limit the opponent, but like look at the right next to the service academies. Air Force won 60.7. Utah, second fewest opponents' plays per game. They're just trying to keep it away. Third, Army, Kansas State's pick. That's the company they keep. Same thing on offense, and Texas has been the opposite because the Big 12 is the opposite, that you're able to go, now instead of doing it with the ground control and being able to hold on to the ball, in the Big 12, you just want as many plays. That's how we have possession. We don't care about the time or what's going. We just want as many opportunities to throw. So it's going to be those clashing styles. And thing is when you can give them, say, an elevated amount, like they're used to 60 plays a game. Texas, hell, last year was bordering on giving up over 80. Now it's like 72.4 this year. But if you're going to give them an extra, 10%, 15% of plays, you got to make sure that you stop them on those because they got more chances at explosives than they normally would.
And what was one key stat for Texas in that K-State game? Defensively, they got off the field on third down. K-State only converted one of their final 11 third down attempts. And at the end of the game, we talk about K-State play differentials, huge when you play K-State.
Yeah. K-State, number one in the nation in opponent third down conversion percentage. Wow.
Texas into the K-State game, plus 8 in play differential.
Yeah.
That's basically a drive.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
In Kansas State, 26.36% is what the opponent third down conversion percentage was.
Yeah. No, when
Utah 6th, 29.7, right there with them. So, that's your carbon copy if you look at just the numbers of how they deploy their plan.
And, of course, all of that forced turnovers. If you look at the games also where Utah struggled, man, teams were able to force them. I think Oregon won the turnover margin by 2. USC actually, I think, lost the turnover margin and still found a way to win the game.
But the USC game is kind of deceiving, though, because Zach Moss was hurt in that game.
This is true. I guess you could point.
That's what some of the numbers, they don't really make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. But turnover still. Turn the football over. That's the ultimate cheat code for the defense.
Well, like we talked about, like when the Texas defense was awful, like the first five games of Big 12 play, guys, they were awful. Like I looked at these numbers today. They gave up, this is Texas to the first five games of conference play, rushing yards per game allowing 203.8, rushing yards per carry 5.17, total yards per game 492.4, yards per play allowed 6.5.
It's crazy.
Third down conversion rate allowed 41.6%. Points per game allowed 36. Why is Texas 3-2? In those five games, you forced 10 turnovers.
Yeah, there you go.
And turnovers are the only reason, A, the West Virginia game probably wasn't a loss, or at least much closer.
Yeah, because you got
and
that.
B, that's the only reason the Oklahoma game wasn't a blowout, because you got those two turnovers.
Turnovers, baby.
You bring up the points right there with Texas. Over for the year, third down conversion percentage for opponents is at 40%. But the last three games, down below 35%, and Texas's defense was competitive some and finally getting healthy at the end of the season. So at least it sort of aligns with that, that you got some bodies back and you started to improve from when you were worse than what your season average.
Yeah, I've got Texas guys over the last four games. Rushing yards allowed per game, 99.3 yards per carry, 3.4 yards per play, all the way down to 5.9. Total yards per game, 407.8. Third down conversion rate allowed, right around 37%. And points per game in kind of those last four games, you're going down from 36 points per game allowed to 23.8.
Yeah. No. You saw, I guess you saw some improvement. No question.
Well, what we were talking about, though, like when you're facing K-State, Baylor –
Iowa State.
You're facing a different kind of offense.
And honestly, to your point, I know Todd Lundell's not here anymore, but Texas had more success defensively versus the offenses that had that used more power sets, used more tight ends,
right,
and used more fullbacks and less spread sets.
Like Neil Brown, I think, wants to, but West Virginia can't right now. They don't have the personnel to do that.
Yeah, they can't do that.
You know, Oklahoma is what it is. Oklahoma State is what it is. TCU, Sonny Cumbie's an air raid guy. And then Kansas, held Brent Dierman, they ran a little bit of everything.
Spread it out, too. They had a little bit of everything. Yeah.
So we've talked about all the numbers. Well, I guess we'll do predictions. Rod, you're taking a Texas win.
I'm taking Texas, man. Mm-hmm. I think it's a perfect – and Tom Herman's really good in bowl games. I know Kyle Whittingham's awesome in bowl games. So I think he has the best record of any FBS head coach.
11-2, I think.
Kyle Whittingham's really good. But I think it's a matchup for Texas if they can just use the advantage of Colin Johnson healthy and Devin Duvernay. I think it's going to be hard for Utah to stop that combo. Yep. So Texas will always be in the game with that combo, and I'm thinking in the fourth quarter, find a way to win it.
No, and with what Texas. You said at the beginning, just talking about what Utah struggled against, and whenever it is against some talent, because Texas has guys out there that are going to be confident that they are more talented or as talented as your opponents. So add that on top of the fact that I was surprised that the offensive line and D lines, like Texas actually, where I thought would be deficient compared to them, may actually be rather even to them. And then when just looking at, like you said, not only is there the element of Herman somehow always performing very well as an underdog and his teams being that way, but this should be the hungriest Texas team we've seen. Like, there is some bad taste in the mouth, not all the way from the coach to the players on how the season went. And there can be that bowl psychology that even though it is a big bowl game and Utah likes Texas, this is just like every single time you have one of these games. It's weird how Baylor ends up playing in Texas's spot against Georgia in the big game. But then you have like the team like Utah that gets left out of the playoff or left out of the championship almost every year be the one that it is a little bit hard, just human nature, that you aren't playing for what you were just playing for, while Texas is flipped in all the incentives there. And I think Texas will, like, by the end of it, I think it's going to be super close. Trade TDs all the way, and say it comes down to a two-point conversion, and just because it feels homerish, I'll say Texas wins 29-28.
Rod, I do like the mentality. I do like the mentality of this Texas team, just what I'm hearing, what I see, what I saw on the practice field. You talked about it, though, your senior year when you guys went out to Texas Tech and lost, and there was going to be no BCS game, no conference championship.
Yeah.
You guys made the decision to basically turn that Cotton Bowl against LSU into your championship game.
Had to be.
The flip side of that, you remember the following year when, same deal, Texas, like, they thump A&M in the regular season finale, but then Oklahoma loses the Big 12 championship game. There is no BCS game for Texas.
Oh, yeah.
Man, that team couldn't have cared less to be in that Holiday Bowl against Washington State.
They couldn't have cared less to be there. I remember that.
So it's one of those deals. Is Utah in that boat Texas was in 2003 where, man, our consolation prize, we got to go to San Antonio. They thought they were going to be in a Fiesta Bowl.
And
with a chance to play for the national championship.
That's true.
And now they're saying, man, is our consolation prize really?
It happens. The SEC will tell you it happens all the time.
Yep.
Hey, for the SEC, bowl season matters now.
I know what I'm saying.
Now they're winning, and bowl season matters. Ridiculous. I'm going to take Utah with this hook. Texas offensive line, go prove me wrong. I think that's where this game is won and lost.
In the trenches.
And I don't think it's in the trenches specifically. I think it is, if Texas wins this game, we'll look back and say, you know what, Herb Hand's offensive line, that group did a damn good job.
Yeah. No, I remember, listen, last year we were all shocked by the D-line and the O-line for Texas outplaying Georgia. I think it's one of those situations, again, I'm with you, I think that it'll have to be that situation where, like, okay, Texas mm-hmm. is the more physical team. That's why they're going to win. But if Texas is not the more physical team, then they won't win it.
Because I think, and you go to Texas loss, LSU, lose the physicality battle.
Yep.
You those goal-to-go possessions in the first mm-hmm. quarter. Basically, that ended up pretty much deciding that game, set the tone
yep.
for that game.
No doubt.
TCU, you lost the physicality battle. Yep. Oklahoma, you didn't lose the physicality battle.
Pumped.
You that was
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got boat race
all
in the physicality.
Baylor.
Baylor, Iowa State. Those are your five losses. Lost a physicality battle.
Couldn't run
every
the ball. Couldn't do anything. Yeah.
There flip side of it. I mean, you beat K-State, you win a physicality battle.
Yeah.
You beat Oklahoma State, you win the physicality battle. It's all about
being in trenches,
it's all about,
man.
So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that.
It's all about hit.
It comes down to who wants it more, and this is that perfect situation where Texas actually may have more incentive than they do.
They may. Yeah, they may.
All absolutely. Right. We gave you guys an extra long, meaty version of the Blitz this week. We had a lot to talk about, but hope you guys enjoyed it. Everybody have a safe, healthy, happy new year. Thank you so much for supporting the podcast. We thank you so much for everything you guys do out there. We get the emails, the tweets, everything about you guys enjoying the show. And
appreciate
we could
it.
Not do what we do without you supporting the show. So thank you very much. And with that, the last Blitz of 2019 is in the books.
Another good one.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
See you guys in 2020. Matt, thanks for everything, man.
You're more than welcome.
Rod B., appreciate the time and the knowledge.
Anytime, brother.
For Matt, for Rod, for everybody, the Austin Radio Network, and the Horn 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260, streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com, where you can get Rod B. on the Rodcast each and every weekday from 1 to 3.
Shameless plug.
That's where you can also hear Longhorn Blitz weekly. And thanks to Matt, you can get this. You can get all our archives, our classic interviews, find it all on the Longhorn Blitz SoundCloud page.
Yep, just type in Longhorn Blitz.
Don't forget to find us anywhere you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify. Search Horns 24/7 Podcast. You get us, the flagship, State of Recruiting. You get it all by subscribing to Horns 24/7 Podcast. For the Horn family, for the Horns 24/7 family, I'm Jeff Howe. Thank you so much for downloading and listening, and we will catch you again on the next episode.
You've been listening to Longhorn Blitz with Horns247.com. Remember, for the latest Longhorn news 24/7, visit Horns247.com.
New CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9/8 Central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.